CliffCentral.com.
Hey, hi, how are you?
Just testing my vowels this morning. A-E-I-O-U. Hey, he, hi, yeah. How are you?
You're sounding like someone in an old age home who is prepping for, you know, a piano ensemble of a performance.
Oh, really?
In the Friday afternoon segment.
Hi. Good.
Because in my day, I used to perform at the Joburg Theatre.
Yeah, that's probably exactly what they sound like. I hope I never bump into anyone like that. That would irritate me. Okay,
that'll
good.
Be me.
Well, yeah, probably one day. You could play the piano?
No.
Okay. I'll play it for you.
Hello, ass. How are you?
Hello.
I see has got his blankie and his cup of, what is that, tea, coffee, hot water? What do you got there?
Just hot water.
Oh, hot water. Mm-hmm. Leanne has got her gloves on. She's got a dressing gown on. She's got a big scarf on. And I'm
no, saying, no gloves.
Oh, it's just the sleeves of your very long.
It's an optical illusion. Oh. And this is a jersey, not a dressing gown.
Oh.
Okay. Oh, all right. Sorry.
Gareth, what were you doing before the show started?
Why?
It sounded like a construction site.
You're joking.
All Leanne and I could hear was. And he's moving around.
No, the microphone I had to move around.
Oh.
Sorry. Yeah, sometimes it
happens. Well, you wake us up, so we're good.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe your pre-show ritual is different to ours.
Yes, I've got a whole ritual. I sacrifice, small animals, and I set up a massive fire in the room here. And
uh-huh.
Yeah, that's kind of, and then we smear the blood, and that's a whole thing.
On that note, where are the rabbits usually in your garden?
Okay, you know this rabbit thing. I mean, it's bad enough I have to update Gord every other day, but now,
yes.
Now none of them are around.
No.
I mean, rabbits don't hibernate, so the only excuse that I can think of is that they've all been taken by some animal, some wild animal, or they've been eaten by neighborhood dogs, or people. Yeah.
Has Carl walked in smacking his lips at any point?
Well, Carl couldn't kill anything if he tried with that useless mouth of his. He's, you know, he's a pet, so there's very little wolf left in him. If a wolf saw him, it would be disappointed in its descendants. It would go, that's what you've done with my children's children? You've turned them into toys? Shame.
He is so chilled.
He is such a happy little dog. And he fights with nobody. There's just about no aggression. It's been bred out of him. Which proves that aggressive human beings, part of it is nature, but part of it is nurture. We know this already, right? We can, you know, you can raise someone properly. But if they come from a long line of warriors and shitheads, they're going to be aggressive.
50% right. Chance.
Yeah, 50% chance. So, but if you raise them badly and they come from a long line of angry people.
Well, then you've basically got a rabid pit bull on your hands.
Exactly. So I think it's true for humans as much as it is for dogs. But he's had all that aggression taken right out of him. I mean, the only thing he fights with is after I've washed him, which I do occasionally. It's not like he always gets washed by someone else. So sometimes, like I had to do this yesterday, he needed a little bit of a clean. So I threw him in the bath and decided to give him a bit of a wash. But then when you dry him, he gets quite aggro with the towel. He's like,
of all things.
Yeah, that's about the most aggressive you ever get.
What was the, he's a King Cavalier Charles of Charles.
Yeah, something like that.
What is the history of, why were they bred?
They were bred as companion dogs. I mean, there's just they have no purpose. Like most dogs we've ever had in our family have been working dogs. They're either, you know, Jack Russells that hunt, or they've been big dogs that chase things, and you know, dogs that can work. I mean, we used to have St. Bernards when I was little, which are those big mountain dogs, those big fluffy things that they used to have. They used to attach a barrel of whiskey to its collar, and then it would go up into the Alps and rescue people. I mean, that's a real dog. now I've got this.
Now you've got this?
Well, he's very sweet.
Because
listen.
I have this miniature pincher, Joey.
Also useless little dog.
No, not at all. He's actually very much still got his purpose bred in him.
What is it?
They were bred, and just to put aside any misconceptions, it's not called a miniature Doberman. That doesn't exist.
Oh.
Miniature pinchers were around before Dobermans were bred. They were bred in the 1600s to catch rats, and later on they went to be used on railways to catch rats because the railways would cause problems with passing trains.
Oh.
And if there is a mouse in the garden, it stands zero chance.
Oh, really? He gets it?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, wow. So they've got very strong jaws. With one bite, they can kill a small rodent.
Even though they're so little.
So tiny. I mean, they're toy dogs, but they're working dogs.
Okay, well, Carl doesn't have any such abilities. Apparently, they were also bred, these Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, they were sort of bred to catch insects and flies and things. But I don't think I've ever seen him do that.
Yeah, that might be a lot for him.
No, he's basically, I mean, I would never have any other breed of dog from now on. It's amazing how, even though we've been through we've run the gamut, and we've had mutts as well, like the most horribly pavement special mutts. I mean, listen, first of all, what I love about a mutt is it doesn't get sick, and they are tough as nails. It's kind of like a human. The more, the less well-bred a human is, the stronger and tougher they are, you know.
Yeah, the more street you are, the better.
Correct. And we had some of those when we lived on the farm, and they were just the most lovely dogs. But I don't think
they had to be lovely. They knew that they didn't have good looking qualities. So.
They didn't even have a nice handwriting.
They had no breeding at all. But they were very sweet dogs. But I don't think I'll ever get anything else now. I mean, these little Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, by the way, they cost a fortune because they're so expertly bred. And, you know, if they're not bred properly and they're not looked after and they, you know, the parents aren't as distantly related as possible, and you know they're all pedigreed, and then they can develop terrible conditions because they're so high strung and high bred, and you know all the rest of it. It's kind of like, you know, where Prince Charles's eyes are so close together.
Yes, either close together or far apart.
No, we didn't move your mouth very much when we talk. Anyway, he's an awesome little dog, and he's getting old, huh? He's 9 years old now?
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I think they only get to 12.
Oh, so, don't think about that just yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do. I've actually started thinking. Listen, I don't have a wife or a girlfriend in my life, and there's no human being that I feel I would, you know, kind of stop things and get involved with at this stage. I mean, it might change, you know, always leave the door open.
Mm-hmm.
But this little dog is the thing that will make me the most sad when it dies.
Oh,
so,
you got to think about these things from time to time. Emotionally prepare yourself. It's like, you know, you get to a stage where you look at your parents, and I'm sure with your mom that all that she's been through, Leanne, you also look at your parents and you're like, there'll be a time, you know, as hard as it is to accept, you have to kind of get ready for this stuff. Sia, you're much, much younger than us, as you keep pointing out every week. So you don't have to worry yet, unless some, you know, unless a bus careens out of control.
Oh, can we not?
If a huge eagle grabs your mom by the nape of her neck while she's hanging up the washing.
That must be a massive eagle. Let me put it there. No, there is nothing that emotionally prepares you for that the death of your first pet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was my first proper heartbreak.
What was your first pet that died and ruined your life?
Yeah, she did ruin my life by dying. Her name was Sheba. She was our family dog. And, like, she and I were inseparable. And she died when I was probably 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I remember, I'll never forget the scene because I was upstairs at home. And I looked out of the window and I saw Sheba just, like, laying on the lawn. And I'm thinking, My, she's not one to read like lie in the sun like that. So I call her name and she doesn't move. I shrieked all the way down the stairs, finding and grabbing everyone I could. I'm like, she was not moving.
Somehow I believe you.
Yes. We go outside and we discover that, man. It's just sad.
Tickets.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a sad and miserable way to start the show this morning. It's a Monday.
The circle of life.
Yeah, let's start with something a little more upbeat. Although these are things people have to deal with. And with COVID, it might be a close family member that you have to do this with. I saw Moonyin Lee, who we interviewed maybe a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. She's the famous agent in South Africa. She was like, she was really the entertainment agent in South Africa for actors, actresses, dancers, singers. She was pretty much it. And what an interesting woman. She came in and sat with me for like an hour. And I'd known her through mutual friends, but I wouldn't say that I'd ever known her. And we just sat and talked as if we were old friends. She was that kind of person. And I just saw lots of tributes to her pouring in over the weekend. She died of apparently COVID-related complications. Mm-hmm. But she used to smoke big fat cigars. And I mean, she was a real character. So you know what? Judging by the tributes that are coming into her from actors and actresses and people all over South Africa, that's a life well lived. You know, you sometimes get the feeling like someone, you can't say the words gone too soon. And I obviously, you know, condolences to her family. It's like with Somizi's mom, Mary Twala, the other day. You also get the feeling like there are lots and lots of tributes, but you can't say the words gone too soon because really, those people, Mary Twala, Moonyin Lee, and there are a lot of others, people who've gone, you know, and you think, actually, that's a good life.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like with any of them there was a wasted time or there was a wasted moment. Or some people you just get the feeling, okay, good. That was a well-written book. It's beautifully started. It's beautifully ended.
And, you know, they squeezed all the juice out of that lemon.
Can I point out something really stupid that happened to me yesterday?
Okay.
So this friend of mine, Gina, sends me this message. She says, you've got to watch Down to Earth Season 1, Episode 4. It's your vibe. So, you know, she knows me quite well. So I thought, okay, well, I mean, let me check this out. It's Sunday. What else have I got to do? So I get on the internet. I find this episode of this old English TV series from like the early 2000s. About this family from London who go move out to the farm in Devon. And it's the dad, and he loses, you know, a lot of money on the way, and they have this farm, but it doesn't really make them any money. And it's this kind of miserable story about this pastoral existence that, you know, the mum starts teaching because she needs to make ends meet, and the one daughter is playing the violin to make ends meet, and it's just...
The other one's a prostitute.
Well, no, thank God, nothing that bad, but it's, you know, it's very... It's like a, you know, little farm story, basically, and it's based on the memoirs of this woman called Faith Addis.
Okay.
So I thought, why the hell is Gina watching this shit? Because it's not her thing at all. I'm like, why did she... And it's not really my vibe. I was like, she's completely misread me. Then, after watching this episode, I'm thinking, something's wrong here. This didn't make any sense. So I look on the internet again. I Google. And it turns out there's another Down to Earth with Zac Efron in it.
Oh, the new Netflix series. Yeah,
and Zac Efron's Down to Earth is like, he goes, episode 4 is where he goes to Sardinia and he talks to these Italians who've lived for a very long time, and they, you know, they're these eccentric, interesting old people. And I'm like, yes, this is why did I watch fucking 45 minutes of this bucolic?
Wow.
We just moved out to the farm and we're going to fix the tractor today. Yes, I'm going to milk the cow and bring in some money. And I watched
I'm glad you took the trouble to remember her name, Addis. Oh, my
gosh,
God.
What a bizarre thing that you watched.
Yeah, well, I'm not afraid to admit I actually watched two episodes. But it was a long time.
You watched another episode thinking, maybe I should give it some time.
I was like, maybe there's something in this character or one of the characters that's up my street.
The penny will drop as the story develops. And
No, I'll tell her today. I'll send her a message a bit later. I felt like such an idiot, though. So what is this Zac Efron thing? Because, again, like when I was searching for it, I went on, and then it's got two or three reviews,
mm-hmm.
and they're all shocking. They're like, this is a shit show. So I'm going to have to...
It is brand new,
Exactly. It's always the complainers that come in first, right?
Yeah. I haven't started watching it yet. I was hoping someone else would and then let me know if any good or not.
Also, I'm really struggling to... I was never born in the age of Zac Efron, and I know Ben used to like him. Ben thinks he's awesome, but I think
I wasn't born in his time either, but I think he's very lovely.
High School Musical fame.
Yeah, he's like Glee and shit. Right?
No, not no, High not School Musical.
Whatever.
Yeah, then he rose up the ranks, and then he did a lot of like big movies.
But he did
like
Disney shit.
Baywatch, and after the Disney stuff, then he started doing all of these big blockbuster Baywatch movies and whatnot. So that's how he's grown. But about the series, I also haven't watched it yet. What I have deduced, what a fancy factual word, deduce.
Nice. Oh,
nice. My hypothesis is...
Good for you. All right. See, starting the morning with verbosity.
God. Yeah. He focuses on the four major elements and how we can create like renewable energy using earth wind and water. And it's all about how we need to go back to basics and whatnot. So he goes around the world experimenting with these different processes and procedures.
It's like a climate change thing.
Oh, no. How's this my kind of show? Gina's completely misread me.
You watched the fourth episode. What did you think of that?
No, I didn't. I watched a trailer for it because
I'd
watched two episodes of that other stupid show. I wasn't going to go knee deep into another one.
your spare time had already been used up.
I'd watched this pastoral English family with their cows and their sheep. And the little girl cries because the rabbits get shot. And oh, my God.
Give it a watch. It might be interesting.
No, I'm not all invested in the other Down to Earth, for God's sake. These characters are living in my head now. Oh, no, we've got to go and milk Daisy, but she looks quite ill. She's fallen over in field. Oh, no, broken leg.
Daisy.
Is there any diesel in truck?
Your two new friends.
Oh, jeez.
How you got into that, is still so sad.
So embarrassing. there's so many weird TV series that you didn't even know existed. I mean, this one I stumbled on completely in stupidity. But there are others. I mean, there must be TV series that have had like 20 viewers that, online anyway, that come from a long time ago that nobody even remembers.
Surely no one's got through them yet.
I remember a show. There was this show starring the woman, ironically, who's in Down to Earth, called Pauline Quirk. And it was about these two sisters.
Uh-huh.
And there was this neighbor. And these two sisters, what were their names? Oh, for God's sake, it's going to drive
me. We'll forgive you.
No, anyway, this was actually a good show. It was on when, I don't know, when I was at varsity or high school or something. And let me just find the name of it. I'm sure you're going to remember it too, Leanne. Unbelievable. Birds of a Feather. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
What were their names?
It was a BBC thing.
Yeah. Their names were Tracy and Sharon.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And yes. And one of them went to prison or something. And it was really, I mean, like the funniest dialogue was written into this thing. And the neighbor's name was Dorian. Hello, Dorian. Anyway, so shows like that, which the only reason I'm thinking about it now is because she was in this other show that I watched. And
yeah.
Like, I wonder how that's aged if I watch it. because it was actually a really good show. It was broadcast from 89 to 98, so it's a long time ago.
It is a huge perk of living in 2020 that you can find anything you want to watch. I have been so drawn to the most obscure things as well on YouTube recently. I don't know why, but I can watch now a dialect coach. You know, there's some like these famous dialect coaches who are booked for massive Hollywood movies, and they explain how they got a particular actor to get a certain accent. Don't ask me why I'm interested in that. Don't ask me if I'll ever learn a new language or an accent, but I can watch that for the longest time.
And I understand, but you know I watch absolutely everything on YouTube. One of them is that, these dialect coaches. It's extremely interesting, but that's also my interest of language and linguistics.
Yeah. Oh, you taught us some interesting stuff last week.
Oh,
why actually, did I?
Yes, with your linguistics.
Professor Moll.
Yeah, we learnt a lot. All right. Another embarrassing thing that happened over the weekend yesterday. I heard this water flowing. I heard like a stream of water somewhere, and I couldn't find it. And I was running around the house and looking at, you know, this is, if anyone tells you to buy a house, just tell them they're talking shit, and it's absolutely do not. Leave that to the landlord, and you try not to own property. Seriously, it's a complete disaster.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
One of my geezers burst.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but luckily, you know, when I built the house, I made sure that there were drip trays in under each geyser. So that means that if anything goes wrong, the water gets caught in the drip tray and then it drains out through the sides of the house, the pipes that go out. That was what I was hearing. So today, somewhere in all of the stuff that I have to do today, I also have to get the geyser fixed. And it is my geyser. I have two in the house. And this is the one that I would use to have a hot shower in the morning.
Oh, dear.
So I can't help thinking that all of our talk the other day about these cold showers that some people have. That the
came back to you.
The universe is trying to force me to do this cold shower thing.
Well, goodness, when you first mentioned there was this dripping sound, I thought it was that loo of yours again.
No, thank
all
you.
All I could think of was just like this stream of shit.
I have a loo in the house.
That would be so fitting.
So I'm glad.
That would be so fitting for the lockdown and all the nonsense we've all been through. There was an actual stream of shit flowing past my house. Can you imagine?
Glad it's water.
Oh.
So, Leanne, you said you have a loo that behaves badly?
It's so dramatic.
Oh.
You've got to keep it turned off at the wall the whole time because it sings very loudly and screams and whishes and whoosh and makes this huge dramatic noise.
It's got a personality.
Yeah.
You must give it a name because my sister has a loo that we've given a name to.
Could probably be Beautricious.
Beautricious. That's fantastic.
Not even Beautricious.
Something with Beautricious. Something with warts on it and a hairy chin.
Hello, Beautricious.
Yeah.
Isn't it a little embarrassing when you have guests over and then you have to explain, no, you have to flush it like this and then hold it up and then move it. Take
it's
it too
one
much
of
to the left. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everybody knows when you're going to the loo.
Because
it's,
it's so loud. Oh, my God.
Oh, Beatrice.
At least it masks any other noises that might occur in the loo.
Yeah, that's true.
Good point.
There's an upside to everything. All right, let's get into some headlines. Alcohol manufacturers and restaurant owners vow not to take the new ban lying down as thousands of job cuts loom. Well, finally, they've found some guts, the alcohol industry. You know, I don't want to be unkind because they've been through hell. And we think about ourselves as users, as buyers, as purchasers, as clients and customers. But really, these guys have just... They were lying down for a long time. They tolerated this until the ban was lifted. Because like an abusive parent says to you, if you're good, I'll buy you a sweetie, and they hit you anyway. This is how the government treats people. And the alcohol industry really did for a long time take this lying down. You didn't hear, and you still haven't really heard a peep from SAB Miller or any of those guys. You know, they're just – because they're so craven. They so desperately want government's approval for everything. And they really do believe they can sit down at the table with government and be taken seriously. Well, governments have proven that they don't care about sitting at the table with the manufacturers of alcohol or with restaurant owners or with small business owners in general. They don't give a shit about you. Government will do their own thing, and they're not interested in you. So they've decided now they're going to they're going to take them to court.
Okay.
And I mean,
but none of these have ever succeeded, whether it was the tobacco industry or.
Yeah, well.
They've never.
They have succeeded. I mean, the only people who've managed to fight for our rights through all this were AfriForum, Dear South Africa, Liberty Fighters Network. It's all these NGOs who don't have a lot of money. And meanwhile, corporate South Africa has been sitting on its hands. You know, oh, do whatever you want, government. We'll just sit here like good children. Corporate South Africa has been so obedient. And I don't think it's going to benefit them in the long run because they've all lost money. So government has lost 3.5 billion rand in taxes from the 945,000 direct and indirect jobs in the industry. 110,000 were already lost in the first part of the lockdown. And if the ban continues, 13,000 jobs will be lost a week. This is according to...
That's the problem, is that South Africa is a huge alcohol-producing country. Mm-hmm. We're not just,
That's why these guys should have taken government to court in the first instance that they decided to ban alcohol. We're the only country in the world that did this.
Can you imagine how this has affected the wine production industry?
Huge, huge. It's a massive, stupid problem. And this is according to Richard Rushton, who's the chief executive of alcoholic drinks maker Distell. He told City Press the ban had left the alcohol industry in a dire situation. He feared thousands of workers will be retrenched as a result. While he could not say if Distell would be forced to retrench workers, he did say that would be a last resort. The SA Liquor Brand Owners Association Chief Executive Kurt Moore said they were reaching out to government to sit down and jointly reach. You see, they're still trying to sit down and talk to government. Fuckers to court. They don't want to sit down and listen to you. You really think Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma and Cyril Ramaphosa and these guys actually care about you and business? They don't know how money's made. They don't know how jobs are created. These are bureaucrats, ideologues. The decision to ban alcohol sales spells a potential disaster for the industry. You don't say. I love the way these guys are waking up to this. Oh, they finally got the cojones to now say something to government. Anyway, the restaurant industry is planning a million seats on the street protest this week to object to the ban. Now, this sounds something I could do. So apparently, Shireen Jones is the owner of the Duck and Dive restaurant in Malelane, in Mpumalanga, said the alcohol ban had brought her business to a standstill. She said the restaurant relied solely on the sale of alcohol to make a profit. The profit margin of food is minimal. Everybody knows this, right? If you run a restaurant, the way you make your money is by selling drinks.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which is why it costs 3 to 4 times what you would pay in a bottle store.
She explained the planned protest was important because of the job losses in the industry. The plan is, according to her, that this week they're going to protest government actively. So she says people don't come to my restaurant anymore because there isn't any alcohol. I want to know what this protest's the details are, so I want to go and sit at a restaurant and protest government. This is something I would do. I'm not going to take to the streets, but I'll go and order something nice to eat.
Yeah, have you been to a restaurant?
No.
In the past couple of days, do you know of people who've been to a restaurant and actually sat down?
No.
But I would. Yeah, because I think that it's outrageous that government have banned people from going to restaurants to eat. I mean, did you see Zinzi Mandela's funeral?
Read about it.
No, I just only saw visuals from outside.
Yeah, and did you see how many people there were?
Yeah, that was way more than 50.
Of course it was more than 50. And did you see a lot of masks? Because I didn't. And taxis are at 100% capacity. Don't tell me that restaurants are more dangerous than taxis. In a taxi, you're in a definitely confined space, right? Even if your taxi's at 25% capacity, you're more dangerous than a restaurant. Your proximity to people's much, much closer. Someone sneezes in a taxi, you've all got COVID.
Yeah.
So this is just stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Anyway, the Food and Allied Workers Union was outraged by the decision to reinstate the ban too. So there's a union with some sense, I'm very pleased to say. And congratulations to FAWU, that's the union we're talking about, and the General Secretary, Mayoyo Mgomezulu, who said that he thinks it's ridiculous. The sudden and shocking announcement to ban the sale of alcohol with immediate effect meant that our members had to engage employers at night to understand if they were going to work the following day. See, nobody in government seems to know that this affects people's lives. They just think, oh, well, if we ban alcohol, there'll be less stupid people causing trouble. Which, exactly a week ago, is what prompted my rant and got us into the news in every major publication without us even trying. Did you see how that whole thing went everywhere? It's still being published in newspapers as we speak.
Uh-huh.
Unreal. I suppose I've got to watch what I say even on this show now.
This is our life.
Anyway, so that's the first story in the news that you need to know about this morning, is that the stupidity continues. And of course, Zweli Mkhize says...
That's the summary.
Yeah, the stupidity continues. And Zweli Mkhize said over the weekend, the Minister of Health, he's not prepared to let us know what the experts who advise him on that medical advisory council of his, he's not going to let us know what they're actually telling him.
Well, now I'm
there's no transparency.
Yeah, I take his presentations every night with a pinch of salt. And look, I'm always as well watching to see if there'll be a different Zoom background, because I think he enjoys that now. That's the thrill of just choosing a new virtual background. Yes. You can tell when a middle-aged, slightly older person is enjoying technology. And I think that's it for him. He sat one day, so I'm going to have the South African flag as my background. Anyway, I digress. So I think it was on Friday evening, if I'm not mistaken, where he said that now you can stay at home for 10 days as opposed to 14.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
You'll be fine. Whereas opposed to there's now some health body that said, no, if you stay at home for 7 days, you'll be fine. I don't know who to believe anymore. I don't know who to listen to. This is all just a lot.
Well, in other news, because there are other news stories that we need to pay attention to, a woman's body was found floating near Kalk Bay Harbor.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
This is my old hood.
I know. Mm. It's understood two local divers saw the body and brought it to shore early on Sunday. Nobody knows how she ended up in the water.
Well, I'll tell you what, it wasn't from swimming and then drowning, because the water is absolutely freezing right now.
Yeah, well, they're not sure what happened, but they've opened an inquest docket. National Sea Rescue Institute spokesperson Craig Lambanon said the body of an unidentified female suspected to be between the ages of 30 and 40 was brought to the shoreline by local divers. Police have started investigations. It appears local fishermen had seen the lady on Saturday night, but... no one's reported to have witnessed her going into the water, so very mysterious.
Grisly discovery. Oh.
Yes. And then Zimbabwe continues to be a stupid place.
A beacon of hope.
You know, I don't know how we let our neighbor to the north become such a basket case, but if you had to arrange countries in order of stupid, Zimbabwe would be right up front, standing proudly with its mouth open, teeth shining, grinning like an idiot.
Drooling.
Yeah, drooling like a fucking moron. Because Zimbabwe is just a disaster. You want to see where stupid leftist policies and African nationalism take your country? Just look at Zim. And everybody thought, well, when Bob Mugabe goes, then everything will be okay, because it's really because he's an evil dictator. No, there is a systemic problem here. And Zimbabwe cannot make a good decision, because every decision they try to make seems to be hampered by their own dumb, backward, idiot ideology. And this is ZANU-PF, right? So their governments say they will continue arresting human rights activists, accusing them of violating COVID-19 regulations. So they're open about this. They're using COVID-19 as an excuse to arrest their enemies.
Hmm.
And when I go on about, like I did last week when I had my little rant, when I go on about your freedoms and your liberties and how those have been taken away from you, it's just a short jump from that to a Zimbabwe situation where the government actually used this as an excuse to round up dissenters. And don't think I'm being dramatic, because in the past few weeks, several activists, lawyers, journalists, and members of the MDC have been taken into custody on various charges because they've been level 2 lockdown. They've had 1,400 COVID-19 related cases. And guess how many deaths?
Well, we've just topped 5,000 as of today.
Zimbabwe's had 24 deaths.
Wow.
Just 24. Oh. Obviously, they're in the early stages of that. There are not a lot of people coming in and out of Zimbabwe at the moment. Among those who were recently arrested are a 22-year-old pro-democracy campaigner, Namatai Kwekweza, and two of her colleagues. They were taken in after protesting against a new constitutional amendment bill in Parliament. I mean, they're protesting actual terrible laws.
Mm. So do you think South Africa, I mean, I know we've got enough on our plate as it is at the moment, but do you think we should be doing something? Let's say COVID didn't exist and we had a little bit of time on our hands.
Of course we should. We should. Oh, we should immediately. We should. Our minister of, what do they call him, DIRCO, so the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. Who's in charge there now? Naledi Pandor?
Naledi Pandor.
She should be on the phone to Emmerson Mnangagwa right now saying, listen, motherfucker, we are the only route you have to a seaport. We are your best bet for imports of food, because that's all true.
Mm.
You better stop arresting human rights activists, because although we don't have any say about how you run your country, our country is a human rights-based country. And, of course, this is if the ANC really believes in these things. And you need to ask yourself, do they believe in these things only when it suits them, or do they really believe in these things? But she should be on the phone to him saying, listen, we've stood idly by and watched you deteriorate into a banana republic. And now you're arresting people under false pretexts like COVID, when we know that that's not the reason that this is going on. You're basically wiping out the opposition.
Mm.
You better watch yourself, because we're watching you. And if he goes, well, we'll just invade you, you say to him, well, fine, you'll get as far as Limpopo.
Yeah.
But honestly, I mean, like, that's brinkmanship, but I don't think that that's ever going to happen, because everybody's so buddy-buddy, you know. We'll just we'll just laugh it off. It's just a couple of human rights activists.
We also have to remember that Zimbabwe's problems will become ours.
That's exactly the point. I'm not interested in interfering in other countries' national sovereignty. It's that their problems are already our problems. How many immigrants do we have, illegal immigrants, to South Africa from Zimbabwe? How many people our economy seems to be supporting Zimbabwe's economy at the moment. We're piggybacking. We have two broken legs, and now we're piggybacking Zimbabwe across the line.
Don't we give them a lot of electricity as well?
There's so much we do for them.
Oh, do we?
Yes, of course. It's just outrageous. Anyway, let's move on. The mayor of Portland in Oregon has renewed his call for federal troops to leave the U.S. city, accusing them of abusive tactics against protesters. They are sharply escalating the situation, Mayor Ted Wheeler told CNN on Sunday. Well, Mayor Ted Wheeler, I have to ask you, just like Emmerson Mnangagwa in Zimbabwe, why aren't you in control of your city? Because Portland's been out of control. On my TV show just 3 weeks ago, I interviewed Peter Boghossian, who is a resident of Portland, and he said the place is just a calamity at the moment. It's a disaster. It's like a third world country in Portland right now. People are running around, setting fire to things, destroying property. There are these Antifa thugs who seem to be in control of parts of the city. So if you need the troops to get out, Mayor Ted Wheeler, how are you going to get control of your city? Because you seem to have lost control of it. So the only alternative is for the federal government to send in troops.
Mm.
There have been nightly protests against police brutality in the city since the killing of George Floyd. Federal government has said it is trying to restore order in Portland, which clearly there isn't. But speaking to CNN on Sunday, the mayor said that there were dozens, if not hundreds, of federal troops in the city, adding their presence here is actually leading to more violence and more vandalism. I don't see how that works. It's like the same mayor is probably on the side of defund the police, because of course that makes people safer. Less police. Stupid idiots. They're not wanted here, he said. We haven't asked them here. In fact, we want them to leave. Okay. And then are you going to have control of your city? Because it didn't look like you did before. Give me proof that you're not a complete ignoramus. How about that? Anyway, so Oregon Governor Kate Brown described the presence of federal troops as purely political theater from the Donald Trump administration. Well, why don't you take control of Oregon, Governor Kate Brown? You and Mayor Wheeler should get together, and all the other Democrats in your state, because it's a blue state. You certainly can't blame the Republicans for the disastrous mess that you have in Portland, Oregon. Why don't you guys show us your plan to get things back under control? And show us how you're going to do that with social workers and counselors, with violent thugs who are setting fire to stuff every single night. Show us how you use a social worker to tame that situation. You clearly have no idea of how humans behave and how to get them under control. So let's see what happens. And then the United Arab Emirates are set to launch a mission to Mars. Believe it or not, the UAE launches its first mission to Mars on Monday as it strives...
Nobody got time for that.
Exactly. As it strives to develop its scientific and technology capabilities and a move away from its reliance on oil. This is a good move by them. This is clever.
If you bring in the oil thing, I mean, that's at an all-time crisis.
The HOPE probe will launch from Japan's Tanegashima Space Center at 1:58 a.m. That obviously happened earlier this morning then, for a seven-month journey to the Red Planet, where it will orbit and send back data about the atmosphere of Mars. This is terrific. Congratulations to the Arab world for their first mission to Mars.
The HOPE probe. It sounds like a bar that you go to if you're really desperate.
Yeah. A probe of hope.
A probe of hope. Jesus. All right, so those are the headlines for this morning. Are you happy with that? Not great news all around, I'm afraid, but it's the truth. Thanks for your well-reasoned explanation. I shall continue to watch and look forward to seeing a growth in levels of maturity of editorial policy on TV, thanks to you and Jane Dutton. Keep up the good work. That's from Claire. That's because Claire asked us last week about why I decided to go on ENCA.
Yes.
In Ireland... You have a road tax disc, an insurance certificate, an NCT certificate if your car is over 4 years old. Did you know this? Our test centers in Ireland were closed, but government put a hold on checking the roadworthiness during lockdown. Also, our insurance companies gave us a rebate on our premiums because we were driving less. How sensible. That's from Cindy in Ireland.
That kind of makes me think that they want you to buy new cars just to avoid all of that. Keep the new car market going.
That's interesting. Here's something that you might be interested in, Leanne. Eddie says, the medication my doctor prescribed me, I've been experiencing side effects. One of them is a morning glory erection.
Oh, goodness me.
It was so awkward.
I've had a lot of side effects, but not that one.
It was so awkward to talk to my doctor and tell her that I'm getting an erection. It's horrible.
Oh.
But isn't a morning glory erection kind of a normal thing?
Unless you haven't been having them.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I don't know. This is more your department.
This is leading somewhere.
Yeah. Very odd. Okay. Good morning, guys. Gareth, did you see the story about the conditions of Livingston Hospital in PE? It even attracted an international audience on BBC this weekend. What is government doing? Well, this is the point, right? Is we've got a government telling us how we must behave. We shouldn't drink. We shouldn't smoke. We shouldn't be buying certain things. We shouldn't be going to restaurants. We can't see our families, blah, blah, blah. All these rules for us. And small businesses are falling to pieces. And the economy's in tatters. But they tell us, no, that we've got shit under control. All we need is more of your money in the NHI, the National Health Insurance. And then that's what they're saying. But I've started to realize that what people say is absolutely worthless. What you need to look at is what they do. Social media is worthless. People say that they're doing wonderful things on social media. Usually they're not that nice a group of people. And government's words are hollow. Because when you see this Livingston Hospital in PE, you'll see it's called the Hospital from Hell. Or Hospital of Horrors. That was the headline.
Yeah.
So If you want to see what happens when you give government your tax money and you say to them, please be responsible with this and look after the people of South Africa who need it the most vulnerable people of all, what do? It's like giving...
Take that and run.
It's like giving a four-year-old or a three-year-old a set of Koki pens and saying to them, draw wherever you want.
That just reminds me, that analogy, of a story my mom tells of when I was young. And she was a single mom painting the interior of the house. She got to the passage and was painting the passage. And as she got to the end of the passage, she realized I'd been following her with a red Koki pen.
Shit. Ruined all her hard work, huh?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Children.
Damn, kids. Kids are damn annoying.
Yeah. Someone sent me a picture of Mark Zuckerberg on a surfboard. Did you see this?
Did you? Oh, my gosh. That is a gem of a photo. No. He's on there. Okay, wait, Gareth, what stuck out to you? Then I'll tell you what stuck out to
me. Well, if you zoom in, you see his white face.
Yes.
He's put obviously, like sunscreen on his face, but it looks like a mask. It looks like one of those white.
It's a lot.
You know those masked ball type white masks?
Yeah,
looks
he's
like
got
that.
A lot of like zinc going on there.
There's definitely not a lizard, of course.
I mean, dude, I know they say we need to protect ourselves from the sun. We always must stay safe, but he just took it way overboard.
He looks ridiculous. I'd be so embarrassed if this was a picture of me in the news. Anyway, you can probably find it just by Googling Mark Zuckerberg surfing, and you'll see the picture that somebody
yeah,
was talking
it's
about.
Exactly
it's like, why is he doing this to himself?
It's so bad.
Something else that stuck out to me with those photos was that he has security while he's surfing. That says you're very paranoid. Yeah. If maybe you Google some other versions of the photo, you see in a bigger frame that his security team is on like a little speedboat following him in the water. Because
maybe he's scared of sharks and there he's lookout team.
Well, I mean, look, if you are a billionaire, then you are a target for
sharks.
Well, no, for people to abduct you and ask for a ransom. This is a serious thing. Rich, very rich people have to think about this stuff.
I don't know, man. I feel like saying just leave him alone. He's just freaking surfing and
maybe
wearing his sunblock, you know.
So here's Dr. Robin has a comment on what we were just talking about now with the hospital in Livingston.
Yeah.
Eastern Cape, says Dr. Robin, is the unloved stepchild of South Africa. Give them a few sweeties to keep them quiet and they'll go away. Except instead of sweeties in this case, scooter ambulances. The ANC does not care or respect their parents or grandparents. Because let's face it, this is where so many of the ANC leaders were born. Neglected, abandoned, ignored. Yeah.
That's really sad.
It is sad, and that's therein, I think, lies a huge amount of shame, which the ANC still have to realize they should be taking on. Here's an interesting point. The same Eddie who messaged us about his morning glory erection says, I was attacked by a Karen yesterday in our WhatsApp group after I responded with, sure thing, Karen. How does one handle a Karen?
Well, unless her name is Karen, I would have attacked you too.
Would you?
Well, yeah, first things first, let's start not to offend people, then be surprised when they come back. Guns blazing.
I don't know what you said to her. You just said, sure thing, Karen, and then she attacked you?
Unless it was meant as a joke and she just didn't get it.
Often I find like the cheapest, easiest way of getting out of a conflict situation is just, even if you don't mean it, just say, I'm sorry. Just say, I'm sorry and get out. Just, I'm sorry and leave the group. I mean, what are you doing in a group with a bunch of Karens anyway?
I do a, you're right, and then walk away.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you guys clearly did not grow up with three older sisters, or rather a lot of women around.
No. Go to every length you have to convince them that you genuinely are sorry, but really your intention is just to get out. Just get out.
After an I'm sorry, I probe further. What are you sorry for? What are you trying to say? What even made you do it in the first place?
Well, then you go through that rigmarole, because as much as it's a pain, And really, this does happen more with women than men, Sia, the thing
Wait,
that you're talking
about. Wait, am I a Karen?
You are a Karen.
I realized,
like, as a guy, just give her what she wants. So she goes, oh, what are you sorry about? And you say, my behavior. Go on, ask me your next question.
Why did you even do it in the first place then?
I was thoughtless and it was really selfish of me.
You know what, Gareth? You just always do this. You always do this and you just never learn.
See, I'm trying to be a better man. And you are helping me. You are helping me. You're getting me closer to that every day. But I just wanted to let you know, I want to put it on the record that I'm really sorry.
Well, you must try harder.
Yeah, don't be sorry. Just don't do it again.
Okay, I promise I won't.
You know, and I never know how to trust you anyway. Sorry.
I know. Yeah, but this is how it goes. So you just keep on, like, I'm wrong. Toxic masculinity. You just go, yes, whatever, absolutely, you, 100%. And then as soon as she's run out of breath and energy, you go away to another place and you have a sleep. Then you wake up feeling great and she's still steaming. It's fantastic. So, and it absolutely works every time. Just diffuse the whole situation. Because you see, most people's reaction is to go, hang on a second, I'm not 100% to blame for this. You take some of the blame too. And then they get aggressive and they fight back. Mm-hmm. And never worth it. Never.
Oh, I would hate fighting with you.
You just disarm them completely by giving them nothing to fight with. Just lie down like a sheep, like the French. Just do what the French do. Just raise your white flag. And I mean, you're pretending, obviously, because you're not a real man if you don't stand up for yourself. But you just keep that to yourself. She doesn't need to know that.
Now that I think of it, I don't think I've ever heard you raise your voice in an argument with someone.
I have, and it's always gone badly for me when I do. And that's another thing, is like, as much as I say that you're not a real man if you don't fight back, also I have learned, and I might not always get it right, but I've learned that very seldom does becoming aggressive or fighting back end well in terms of that.
No, you're met with exactly the same
resistance. Because then you activate the reptilian brain in that person, and then you're just two reptiles hissing at each other. It's just, so if you can, diffuse is number one. Because also, if you take any, so any argument, you've got to be prepared to take it to the point where you're ready to kill that person.
Ooh.
If you're not prepared to take it all that way, scale back. In other words, imagine the worst case scenario at the start of the argument, and then you will make the right decisions. Take it right to the edge. Take it to the worst possible place it can go. Am I prepared to kill this person in order to win this argument? If your answer is no, then start scaling back right at the beginning. And you will, in the end, you'll probably gain more territory. Not always.
You see, that's too much logic.
Yes, but you can't be emotional. Emotional is how we've got to this clusterfuck of a situation in the world right now, where we have like troops in Portland and Zimbabwe arresting human rights activists and government selling the whole country down the river with stupid policies and even worse execution of those policies. It's all because of emotion. No one's applying logic. If you apply cold logic to a situation, you very seldom end up with irreparable consequences. But emotion almost always leads you to irreparable consequences. So I know it's hard because we are emotional creatures. And I, you know, for example, like last week Monday, and I've got to end this because we've got it at 7 o'clock already. But last week Monday I had this rant, in inverted commas, about the president and his, you know, his little lecture to us about how bad we've been. And someone said to me, oh, you were very emotional about it. But I actually wasn't. And I listened back to it. And I'm as passionate when I talk about someone who farts in a lift. And I'm as passionate when I talk about how, you know, this morning, how I made the wrong decision about what show to watch. That's how I sound about things. But it's not emotion. That's just enthusiasm. It's passion. Mm-hmm. I'm actually very, very low on the emotional scale. I don't get emotional easily. And that goes back to what Sia said just now about how I don't raise my voice and I seldom get into screaming matches with people because I'm not emotional. I'm really not. And I thank God for it. It has been my saving grace. And I do believe that an element of being a successful person navigating the complications of human life is that you have to have your emotions in check.
Not always easy.
Not always easy. I am a Mariah Carey song released in the 80s. I'm all about emotion.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. No, I get you, but it's not always the way. All right, so many things to talk about, so many places to go, so many messages to get to. 0797482090. It's a Monday morning, cliffcentral.com.
Cliffcentral.com.